and he knows far more about the subject than I do, so I'm going to let him tell you.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me out to the Folk Festival, and it's nice to see all you beautiful people. Are we having fun yet? Very good. I'm a native Floridian. My family originally came from up in this part of the country. They migrated south back in the turn of the century. Settled in around Fort Lauderdale. Left there during the Great Depression and ended up in Tampa, where I was born. And I spent most of my life running around the local swamps. I've been hunting alligators since I was in diapers. I remember going with my mom under her arm, and it excited me. I got an adrenaline rush at probably 2, and I've been getting it ever since. I trapped alligators for the state of Florida for a number of years. I worked with the International Union for the Conservation of Nature and Natural Resources and the alligator and the crocodilian management programs throughout the world. I helped develop the alligator management program with the old Commissioner Doyle Connor back there. They had to get their piece of it. How you doing, Doyle? We worked very hard and diligently on establishing this program. Today, it is in the Florida Department of Agriculture as a aquaculture. It's advertised and promoted by the department as part of their seafood program. It has its own alligator marketing plan, of which we use to try to keep alligator farming a viable industry in Florida. Interesting things happen to these reptiles. They've been around for, well, since Florida rose up out of the ocean. We've had alligators here. Over the years, they have been hunted for their leather specifically. At the turn of the century, they were taking something like 500,000 alligators a year out of Florida wetlands. This continued up into the 50s, with the numbers falling to around 100,000 in 1950. And the state of Florida just had to do something about it, so they made it illegal to hunt alligators. Well, old boys like me, you know, we made a little spending money hunting alligators, and there ain't no government guy gonna tell me I can't hunt no alligator because he can't catch me. And so I hunted for a few more years after that. But they got after the tanneries and they closed them down, and I ended up going away in the military. And when I came back, it was on the endangered species list, and you weren't going to hunt no alligators and have to deal with federal agents. That went on. So I went in the insurance business. I figured that was the next best predator business you could get in. So for about 20 years, I was in the insurance business, and I was very successful at it. And I sold my company and retired when I was 46 years old. For lack of something to do, one of the state senators says, "I need you in Tallahassee. The state of Florida is under a mandate to develop an alligator management program. And we need people with the expertise that you have to help guide the process." We had to negotiate between the industry, the bureaucrats, and law enforcement in order to comply with the CITES rules. CITES is the International Convention in the Trade of Endangered Species. And they actually control anything that happens with any wildlife or fauna. And without one of those permits, you can't ship anything outside of the country of origin. And then it's controlled within the country of origin by the local law enforcement, the local government. So we wrote that in 1986. We passed the law. It became the Florida Alligator Management Program, so now we could legally farm alligators and we could legally hunt alligators under the guise of the law. The law says that in order to harvest alligators out of the wild, that land first had to be surveyed, that wetland. We had to determine how many alligators were there. If we were going to remove eggs from the nest, we had to literally count the number of alligator nests in that wetland and determine from that how many nests would be taken. Under the Florida law, we were only allowed to take 5% of the live animals off of the wetland. Only 5%. 95% remained. But you know, we have so many alligators, 5% is a lot. We have about the same number of alligators today as we had in 1950. There's just a little over a million. And I guess we all know about all of the problems that we've had with alligators in the last mating season. We've had a lot of people do some stupid things and put themselves in the way of a big male alligator that is highly territorial. That's his land. That's his water. And he's going to defend it just like you would defend your home from your neighbor. And unfortunately, they did some terrible things and paid for it with their life. Alligators give no quarter. They don't think. They have a brain about the size of a cashew nut, about that big. They got a heart about as big as your thumb. So he really doesn't care. God put him here to do two things: eat and sleep. And he does a lot of both. They're eating machines. They eat live animals. They eat dead animals. And they're carnivorous. And so if you put yourself in the path of an alligator, you can expect to get hurt. If you visited my table over there, there's one. It was 13-4. That animal weighed 1,100 pounds. And I can tell you, he can hurt you. And if he got a hold of you in the water, you would not survive it, because you could not handle an animal of that size. I always said it, I shouldn't jump on alligators that weighed more than I did. But most of the time, I only weighed 120, 130 pounds. It's only been since I retired that I began to put on a little weight. I had an alligator of close to that size, which was the cause of my retirement from the state of Florida. He was 910 pounds. I caught him by myself in a remote area. He rolled over on top of me. And when you turn an alligator upside down, they faint. The blood rushes out of their brain, and they faint. They go unconscious. And I couldn't pick him up and get him off of me, so he was slowly crushing me to death. About the time things got fuzzy, the good Lord says, enough is enough. And that alligator woke up and flipped back over, and he took me with him. And I stayed with him for another hour and a half. And I finally figured out a way to get him tied up, because I couldn't get off his back. He was mad. And he didn't like me being there. And I really didn't want to be there, but I knew I had no choice. So I stayed with him. I finally got him tied up. Six men tried to pick him up and put him in the back of my pickup truck, and they couldn't lift him. So they went and got a forklift, and we rolled him up on a pallet and picked him up about level with the pickup truck, and then we rolled him off into the back of the pickup truck, and I took him home and gave him to my wife. Sure did. Now I know what you're thinking. You're saying, well, what did she do with it? And I'm going to tell you, she relocated that alligator, as big as he was. Now you want to know where she relocated it so you don't go visit there, right? Well, she relocated it to Great Swamp in the Sky. Amazing thing about that alligator, I made a lot of money off of him. I got $80 a foot for his hide because it was absolutely perfect, which is almost unheard of from that size animal. His meat was as pretty and pink and sweet as it could be. And I kind of figured what happened was that somebody had kept this alligator in a pen in their backyard, and they'd been feeding him and taking care of him since he was a young hatchling. And he never fought with another alligator. All his teeth were there, and they weren't broken off. This is during mating season, and he certainly should have had some battle scars. He had no battle scars. Absolutely perfect. So he apparently was in that pen. He got away, went over to this fish farm, and they were going to seine out some of their tropical fish. And when they went to seining, this thing bobbed up and looked at them. And they got out and walked on water. They called us, and I went out there and looked at him. I didn't think he was all that big. Shoot, I've been on so many alligators, it didn't bother me. I'd just come back from New Guinea, and I seen crocodiles over there as 20 foot. So this guy didn't look that big until I got on him. So I learned my lesson, and I decided it was time for me to give it up. So I quit jumping on alligators, and I haven't jumped on one since. But I worked a lot with alligators and helping marketing alligators and educating people about alligators. And that's what I hope to do with you folks a little bit today, is to educate you a little bit about the myths and the truths about alligators, because there's a lot of myth. And storytellers like myself, we like to exaggerate, because that makes the good story. We tell you all kinds of things about what alligators can do. They can outrun a racehorse. So you can't outrun one. But you know what? I ain't never had one chase me. I've been around alligators all my life, and I have never in my life anywhere in the world ever had an alligator chase me. So why does it matter? Doesn't matter whether you run zigzag, straight away, or what you do. Alligators aren't going to chase you. Now, I can tell you, if you find a female that's guarding a nest, she'll let you know real quick that you don't belong there. If she's in the water, she's going to slap her tail, she's going to blow real hard, and she's going to just make a fuss and let you know that she's there and she doesn't want you there. And if you don't back off, she'll teach you something. To catch one like that, when I worked for the state, because oftentimes they build one of these nests up in somebody's backyard and they hadn't been out back in a while, and they walk back there and encounter this alligator that was kind of nasty. So I'd go over there and I'd look at her, and she'd blow, and she'd hiss, and make all kinds of a fuss, and I just, like I was afraid of her. And so she'd walk toward me. So I'd go a little bit more, and I could take her wherever I wanted her to go, to where I could catch her. But I can tell you, the moment that I turned to catch her, she would turn and head for the water. And at that precise moment that she turned and headed for the water was the time that I needed to be airborne, fixing to land on her back so that I could hold her down and start tying her up. If I gave her 1 second or a half a second more, she might turn around and catch me about mid-flight. My air brakes don't work too well. So I might land in 80 round, pointed teeth biting down at 3,000 pounds per square inch. And as you can tell, I don't have any of those kind of marks on me, so I didn't make that mistake. So if you encounter a female, she's going to let you know that she's there, she doesn't want you there, and the smart thing for you to do is to move out. Get as far away from her as you can, as quickly as you can. Because if you challenge her, she's going to bite you. And if she bites you, she's going to hurt you. She's going to break bones, she's going to tear flesh. If she bites you on the calf of the leg, first thing she's going to do is flip. When she does, she's going to take all that meat and bone with it. She's going to take it right off at the kneecap or at the hip. And you won't stop it. So So you don't ever want to give one an opportunity to bite you. That's the first thing that my mother taught me, is never give an alligator an opportunity to bite you, because you will lose whatever it is that he bites. Males, certain times of the years, you don't challenge males. April and May is the breeding season. Alligators get up and they start walking. They go from pond to pond. You probably can hear them bellowing. They'll growl, you know, the old gator growl. They'll make that water vibrate, stand up, shoot up, stand up on their back that high. Sound like an old chainsaw running out there. And you'll hear one over here, and then you'll hear one over there. And all they're doing is locating one another so they can go over there and steal their girls and kill that other male. That's his primary mission in life, is to kill that other male. So he will walk a mile or more to get to that other male and kill him and breed those females. If you present yourself to that alligator, he's already in a bad mood. He's already wants to kill. And so he will do exactly that. I wouldn't snorkel in Florida waters where there are big alligators during that time of the because just think of yourself horizontal in the water. You're presenting yourself as an adversary. And dumb you, you got your head down in the water looking to fish on the bottom, and the alligator sneaking up behind you. And when he comes to you, he's not going to play. He's there for one purpose, and one purpose only, and that's to kill his adversary. Kill or be killed. So he's going to kill you. So we had a lady out there snorkeling right at the height of the breeding season. Guess what? She snorkeled by a big old male, and he taught her something. Another thing you don't want to do is put your feet in the water or tease an alligator by making a ruckus on top of the water. You know those little black spots? You can see it on that big head over there. A whole bunch of little black spots on the lower jaw of an alligator. Every one of those is a sensor receptor. And he detects the vibrations in water, and he can pinpoint the prey wherever it is just by the fluttering on the water. So when you're out there swimming around or patting the water, he's coming to that sound. And if you're about this deep in the water, you just your head sticking up, you know, you don't look like any different than a big old raccoon. Raccoon's food. Another thing you don't want to do is you don't want your kids swimming with pets, because the smell of the dog gets on the kid. Kid goes out there in the water. An alligator stalks his prey by sight, sound, and smell. Very acute. He sees that child, he smells that dog, and he hears the fluttering in the water. And that don't mean nothing but the dinner bell is ringing, and he's coming. Now, I swam with a lot of them when I was a youngster, but I hadn't been playing with the dog. And so we knew not to do certain things. When people move down here to Florida and they see the number one predator of our wetlands, they're at the top of the food chain. And that's exactly where we'd like to live, right on the banks of his domain. But we don't learn what to do. As a result of that, alligators are seeing people every day where they didn't used to. When I was a youngster, you were lucky to see an alligator, because the moment he saw you, he disappeared. He was scared to death of human beings. He didn't know what they were, and he didn't want to look at them. You weren't his food, so he would shy. And to hunt an alligator was very difficult. Today, to hunt an alligator is not difficult at all, because they're not as shy as they used to be, because they look at people every day. We got people moving into our state, 3,000 a day, brand spanking new residents. And these wetlands are being built upon, and everybody wants to live on their little piece of waterfront. The alligator sees you. The second thing that happens as a result of that is that we inadvertently feed the alligators, and feeding alligators is a bad, bad thing to do because they become welfare alligators. They depend upon you for their food now rather than from the natural resources. And they do that several different ways. We can do it in, accidentally because we're out there setting our cat food outside to feed our animals. We let our animals run loose. We don't watch over them. We go out to feed the fish and the ducks, and we're throwing bread and crackers out there on the water. Oh, looky, looky, the fish and the ducks, aren't they pretty? And all of a sudden you see a head bob up. He might only be that long, but he's in the learning process. Right now he says, people versus food, man, what a life have I got. And every time you walk down to the shoreline, he's going to be there. And that's not too bad when he's only a couple feet long, but when he gets to be 10 feet long, that's a problem. And the problem is going to be very disastrous. So watch your P's and Q's. Don't feed the alligators. Stay away from the water at night, dusk and early morning. Don't get in your low-profile kayaks or scuba dive during the months of April and May, because all you're doing is challenging one, and you're going to lose. I don't do it. I'm deathly afraid of alligators, and I've caught thousands of them. I've hunted crocodiles in Australia and New Guinea. Steve Irwin, I guess all y'all know Steve Irwin, don't you? Little crazy Steve, crocodile hunter. Well, his father and I hunted crocodiles together in Cape York, Australia. Steve was just a little guy. I met him there before he married Terry. Steve and his wife Terry kind of like took over where my wife and I left off. We used to do all that crazy stuff. So enough of that. I want to share some of the reasons why we alligator farm today. It's for its meat and its hides. We don't waste any part of the alligator. The only thing that we don't use is the grunt. Everything else is sold for something. When an alligator is skinned for his hide, it's salted down and pickled in salt, so it doesn't have to be refrigerated. Then it's sold to the Europeans or the Asians for tanning. When it comes out of the tannery, it looks like this. This is called a crust. It's just plain old leather. It won't spoil. It doesn't require any refrigeration. They're real light, cheap, easy to handle, and last forever. And then when they get an order for a finished skin, the person who's going to make the alligator product will order a finished skin. He may order it in any color that you can ever possibly imagine, depending on what they're going to do with it, whether it's going to be a lipstick case, a purse, a pair of shoes, whatever. And even I've seen jackets, complete pantsuit outfits made out of alligator skin, upholstery in Mercedes-Benz. You got to have a lot of bucks to do that. And this is what the skin looks like when it's finished and ready to go to the cutter. The cutter then cuts the patterns for the product that they're going to make, and it's then sewn together and makes a finished product. Every man's dream, a pair of alligator boots. These boots right here are full alligator with it's custom made by Gary Loveless in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, by an alligator that I caught, sent to Europe to have tanned. It's got a kangaroo fine leather inside, full alligator on the outside. That boot right there sells for about $3,000. It's a good incentive to farm, isn't it? Problem is, you got to grow a lot of them, and you got to have the expertise. And land is expensive, and we got every bureaucrat in the world regulating the industry. We have 14 working farms in the state of Florida. They produce about 600,000 pounds, 400,000 pounds of alligator meat, and 100 and something skins per year. A lot of people have asked me what this is right here. This is a scute. This is the bony part of the back of the alligator. It's actually an osteoderm. An osteoderm, oster is bone, derm is skin. And so these little lumps on their backs are osteoderms. That's bone within the skin. Okay? And they hurt when you jump on them. Believe me. I've been all cut up along here. They cut you pretty good, depending on how big the alligator is and how much it moves around after you get on him. This is what we call a flint cure. I cured it in salt and dried it in the sun, made it rock hard. This will literally spark when the saw is cutting it. We use the saw to cut out the pattern of the products that we're going to make, such as my belt buckle and various other kinds of articles are made from that. Most all the people that you see that make these, make this stuff individually, and they market it individually, everything that they can make. The little scutes are made, earbobs, buttons. The big ones are used to make brooches, medallions, that sort of thing. We also do the same thing with the teeth, the toenails. So we don't throw any part of the alligator away. And I got 5 minutes left, so I'm going to give you a chance to ask me questions. What you got on your mind? What did you always want to know about an alligator? Yes, ma'am. Do not know of anybody that's been swamped out of a kayak, but I can tell you, as a person who kayaks a lot, during April and May, I do not kayak where I know there are very large alligators, because I know I'm presenting that kayak, I'm so low in the water, that I'm presenting that kayak as an adversary. And I don't want to find out what he's going to do. Because once he got me in the water, I don't have a chance. So I kind of like avoid that. But the rest of the time, I've been known to paddle right up to him. If he'll hold for me, I'll paddle right up to him and talk to him. And I've had him bob up next to my kayak looking for fish because the fishermen have been feeding them. But I've never known one to actually attack a kayak. Anybody else? Yes, sir. It doesn't get cold enough in Central and South Florida for them to hibernate. They probably go a little dormant here, not a true hibernation. They don't go to sleep or anything like that. They eat usually whenever food is presented in front of them, but they hunt probably every 4 to 6 days. On an alligator farm, they feed alligators every 4 days. And in proportion to the body weight, and they feed them gator chow made by Purina or Barris. In Australia and New Guinea, most of the big alligator farms or crocodile farms are owned by chicken processors, and this is how they get rid of their offal, is rather than take it to a landfill or put it in an incinerary, they raise crocodiles. And they feed the offal to the crocodiles, and then they harvest the crocodiles, and they make money off of that. Yes, ma'am.
If one of us find ourselves in the mouth of an alligator, and we might have a chance, it wasn't a great big one, what could we do? Is there a vulnerable
pray.
Spot? Is there any vulnerable
I recommend a lot of prayer. I recommend a lot of prayer.
I want to know something better. What if it was a small, because you hear about them taking people and some people get away. How do they
ever? If you grab me and I wanted to get away from you, you know how the easiest way to do that? Poke you in the eye. And when I caught alligators, the first thing I do is put my hand over their eyes. I can control that animal. You know how you can take and squeeze the back of somebody's neck and it hurts? Well, imagine doing that to the eyeballs of an alligator. And the more he acts up, the tighter you go down. When he starts to do what you want him to do, you let off. It doesn't take him a long time to learn that if he acts up, he's going to hurt. He's got three eyelids. He's going to close his eyelids so you're not right on top of his eyeball. You don't want to squeeze so hard that you pop his eye, but you want to squeeze hard enough that you get him under control. I can tell you, if one bit me and I wanted to get away from him, that's the first place I'd go was for the eyes, because I think I could make him let go. If I took my thumb and jammed it in his eye, he'd let me go. Last question, sir. The most common method of removing an alligator from a location is to bait him up. We use a stinky piece of meat. I used to use beef lung, cured in the sun. The stronger it smelled, the better I liked it. I could put it upwind from the alligator. He would hone in on it right away. He'd go to it, gulp that thing down, he'd be on the hook. When I had that hook in his tummy, I could lead him anywhere I wanted him to go. And I'd lead him to shore, put a rope around his neck, I'd pull him out of the water, turn around and jump on him. Tie him up, put him in my truck, and away we go. Take him home and give him to Mama, and Mama would relocate him. Thank you, folks. If you'd like to know more, stop by the table. Also want you to know about our alligator meat snacks. We sell an awful lot of meat. I like to buy the trimmings from the processors, and then I developed this alligator meat snack jerky with the University of Florida back in 1990, and we sell it to tourists, and you can buy it at GatorBob.com. Remember that, GatorBob.com. Go to the internet, have